You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Good morning, folks.
Morning, Dan and Danette.
Morning.
Here we are, another day, another Dan Patrick Show. If you'd like to watch, Peacock.
Peacock. I like the way you say Peacock.
If you want to listen later, download the podcast.
Download.
But right now, 3 hours live of the best sports talk on the air. Welcome to the Dan Patrick Show.
I love Dan Patrick. Oh, my God.
Home to the biggest guests and best sports talk on radio.
I love it.
One of my favorites.
Normally, home to Dan Patrick.
Hope you'll miss us.
But today, Dan and the Danettes are off.
Don't see another radio show behind my back, please.
And filling in, it's an Up On Game DP Takeover.
There we go. It's good.
Broadcasting from the Mercedes Man Cave, this is the Dan Patrick Show.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. It's LeVar Arrington in the Fox Sports Radio studio with TJ Hushmanzada and Plexico Burrs. We are the Up On Game crew filling in for the great one, Mr. Dan Patrick, and the rest of the crew, the Danettes. Yeah, it is best sports talk radio, and you know what? We're going to do our best to make sure it continues to be the best sports talk radio in the world, people. Good morning.
Hope in you the got world, Craig.
Craig, top notch, baby. Hope you got your hot, warm tea, your coffee, your mocha latte, whatever you take, your pumpkin spice latte, your mocha ada, yada means, whatever you drink. I hope you got it. I hope you got your, should I say newspaper or pulled up on your phone, on your mobile device, getting all of your news. I don't know.
Do people read newspapers anymore?
I don't know.
That's a great question.
I haven't seen one in quite some time. I go to my news. I get news updates on my phone, man.
Does anybody like really get quarters and put it in the machine and get newspapers anymore?
When's the last time you seen a payphone?
When's the last time you seen a machine where you can even get a newspaper?
Hey, you know what? Speaking of which, being a paper boy was my first job at 11 years old. That was my first job.
You know, that's how I figured out I could run, was delivering papers with my cousin. So we were delivering newspapers, and we went down an alleyway delivering newspapers. And if you know about Pittsburgh, which you know a little bit about Pittsburgh, Plex, this was in the Homewood area of town. Oh. We were on alleyway right off of Hamilton Ave, and I was walking delivering papers, and the colors changed like for your clothing and your hat on this block in particular from the color of the block that me and my cousin was from. And then they let out a pit bull that was the same color as their colors that they were wearing that were different from ours, and my cousin he jumped on top of a car and he was safe. My older brother, he had like a 4140 and he was gone. He was actually two blocks away, looking behind, telling me to run. And I was left by myself to figure out what to do with this red-nosed pit running behind me with its tail its tongue wagging. Its tail wasn't wagging. So I went running off. And that was when I felt like I was fast, and I knew this dog was catching me, and then I slowed down. I was like, I'm running so fast that this dog is going to slide right past me, and I'm going to be like Dion. I'm going to high step out of here. Let's see if this works. I put my brakes on. The dog goes sliding by like I thought it would, so now I'm feeling myself. I felt so good about myself. I changed directions. I ran back towards him as he's sliding by me, the little fat boy on the porch, because you know they had row houses. So little fat boy on the porch eating chicken, and then I rolled up and I was like, let me in your house, let me in. I ran up his, he was like, no, don't come up here. I was like, let me in your house. He was like, no. By that time the dog had already regrouped and had started back around. And needless to say, I jumped over the porch and jumped onto the ground while the dog was biting into the fat boy, and he got a much better meal than me. And I figured I figured out I could run.
So basically, what you're saying that the LeVar leap was created
out of necessity.
Yes. Running from a dog.
In Pittsburgh, not on a football field.
Out of necessity, I learned how to jump over things and jump out of things, and that, I guess that became kind of my calling.
Run away from the dog.
Running. Get away. You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show. It's a beautiful thing. We got a whole lot going on. We got a whole lot to talk about, guys. And, yeah, it's a fine Wednesday morning. We've already discussed free agency. Should you run to Tampa Bay and go be with Tom Brady to try to win another Super Bowl? Or do you go get some money if you're a guy that isn't going to get money? How does that play out? Do you end up in Tampa Bay? We talked about an interesting topic with Trevor Lawrence and everything with him. Do you take him at the number one pick? If you have an opportunity to pivot out and take a Deshaun Watson and figure out how to do a trade on that, does that happen? Thought there's been some great perspective, great conversations going on for the show today. I want to take us into another topic, guys, concerning another quarterback, and that would be the quarterback that is in Philadelphia right now. And Carson Wentz, we trust, or should I say trust Ed, past tense. They're looking to seek a trade, and from all reports given, it seems as though Carson Wentz does not want to go to Chicago and would rather be united with his old offensive coordinator in Indianapolis with the Colts. They had a great season last year. Their defense is really strong. The offense is pretty good. They got some good, strong receivers on the outside, T.Y. Hilton, a couple other young talents. You got a young talent in the backfield. Taylor came on this year at the running back's position. It just seems like a great situation for Carson Wentz if he were able to make it to the Colts. Does he have any leverage here to get there, and is that the best fit?
His leverage is privately saying he doesn't want to go to Chicago. That's the leverage he has. And of course, it's the best fit, and it's the best fit for football reasons and non-football reasons. Football reasons, first and foremost, is what you said. They have a really good defense. But what they have and what he really needs, they have a really good young offensive line. Left tackle retired. I'm sure they'll probably draft a left tackle in the first round. And voila, there you go. Offensive line is back where it was. And so he has it. Now, you look at Chicago. If I'm Carson Wentz, do I want to go to Chicago? If the Bears do not win, GM, Ryan Pace, head coach, Matt Nagy, they're probably going to be fired. And so does he want to go into that situation knowing it's the same thing in Philly? If I don't win, they're going to be on my head. The fans in the city of Chicago, he just experienced that in Philly. Whereas he can go to Indy with Frank Wright. It is not going to be the type of media he was used to in Philadelphia. I mean, there's just so many different dynamics on and off the field that I believe he would prefer Indy. And he had his best success with Frank Wright, who is now the Indianapolis Colts head coach. And so it's going to be tricky, but he has to privately say, I don't want to go to Chicago, because that will give them a little hesitation. But they know that their jobs are on the line, so they're going to do whatever they can to get them.
I think for Carson Wentz, man, looking at all three teams, Philadelphia, Indianapolis, and Chicago, they're basically carbon copies of what he's doing in Philadelphia. I don't think the offense is that offense has changed that much if he chooses to go to Chicago or Indianapolis. But as far as looking at the Colts, I believe that is the best option for him. Looking at the offense and what Phillip Rivers was able to accomplish last season. You know, listen, Carson Wentz is not – they're not going to lean on him to get out of the pocket and make plays with his legs, which he has been able to do over the past couple of years. He's been injury prone. But it's more of a pocket-style offense for him, and I believe that's the best option that fits his skill set. For him to go to Chicago Bears and Matt Nagy and John D. LaFootball, I think, is the offensive coordinator who was the wide receiver assistant coach with me in New York when we won the World Championship. He's a great offensive mind. Then he went to Cleveland. But I think that for Carson Wentz, the best option for him is to go get reunited with his offensive coordinator and it's the best fit for him. For him to go to Chicago, I just honestly believe that it's a bad situation getting worse.
Yeah, I think the best fit for him is certainly to go with a coach that he has a rapport with, that he's familiar with. That always matters. It's interesting. I don't know how many times you guys have had to deal with this, but it came up when, you know, when Marty, shots out to Marty Schottenheimer and the Schottenheimer family, when he passed away, this came up and it was brought to my, you know, my recollection during my career is I was always dealing with a new coach, fellas. You know, it's like my first year there, I'm dealing with an interim head coach by season, mid-season. You know, I'm dealing with a new coach by my second season. I'm dealing with a new coach by my third season. I had three coaches. I had four coaches in 3 years of playing at the pro level. In the first 3 years of my career,
who was your favorite one?
Marty was my favorite. My trajectory was different when I was. That was when I made my first Pro Bowl. That was my first All Pro bid. That was my best season campaign that I had up to that point, which was only my second season. I carried that momentum and made two more Pro Bowls and got some second teams on All Pro. But my trajectory changed. My ability to achieve changed based off of the environment that was created by Marty and his coaching staff, and then he was gone. He was fired. So the reason why I bring that point up is no matter what happens right now, unless Carson Wentz ends up in Indianapolis, he's going to have to deal with a new head coach. Here's what happens when you get a new coaching staff that comes in. Everybody wants to come in. They want to make their presence known. They want to make sure that they understand that it's going to be how I want it, my way, and the way that my coaching staff does it.
But, Zavar, we know. For quarterbacks,
it's different. Is it really different?
Yes, it's different. You know it's different.
But is it different with more pressure? Because to me, the pressure of your job is going to hinge from who you have playing at the quarterback position. So even though it may be different in terms of how the tone of what a coach may be to a different position grouping, you're still talking about the most pressure of what a coaching change is going to create is going to go directly at the quarterback position, right?
But the success of the team will come down to how well that quarterback plays. And so first, as soon as they get a job, they're calling a quarterback. And he's had success with Frank Wright. And he hadn't had that type of success since Frank Wright left. And so that's why he wants to go to Indy. And the holdup is Indy knows he wants to go to Indy. Indy knows they need a starting left tackle. Indy isn't willing to part with their first round pick. We're going to stall you out. We know he doesn't want to be in Philly. We know he doesn't want to go to Chicago. We're going to stall you out. You're going to take what we offer you. Send him to Chicago. Coaches will get fired. We'll get him the next year if we don't draft the quarterback. And so there's so many variables that are going on here that regardless of who's the coach, they're going to tailor things to the quarterback as they should. New head coach, who's the first person he calls on the team? He's not calling Plaxico, LeVar, or TJ. He's calling the QB.
It sounds good, but to me,
TJ, you got to remember that LeVar's a defensive guy. He doesn't understand.
I'm a head coach. you got to keep coach. In mind, I'm a head coach now, though.
Defensive guys don't understand.
I played offense.
Quarterback.
I got parade player of the year as a running back.
You got parade player of the year.
As a running back.
Hey, we were all great. You know, I was a parade.
I know you was a parade.
Come out of high school.
I was a zero-star recruit coming out of high school, so I can't relate to all the accolades you big fellas get.
All I'm saying is don't y'all try to diminish my ability to talk about the offensive side of the ball because I play defense in college and in the pros. Y'all will not disrespect me like that.
Nobody's disrespecting your 40 skills, running away from the pit bull, running into people's housing, jumping on top of cars.
Public housing running.
But for Carson Wentz, it's all about familiarity. If he can get back with Frank Wright, I think that's the best option for him, no doubt about it. I think Matt Nagy's probably going to be out of Chicago. If he doesn't win this year, he's definitely out of there. And then he's back to square one as far as, you know, being able to run an offense to be able to, to have a rapport with the offensive coordinator. And in my first 5 years in Pittsburgh, there was a lot of instability as far as, you know, offensive coordinators and quarterbacks. In my first 5 years in Pittsburgh, I had Kevin Gilbride, you know, Ken Wisenhunt, Mike Mularkey. And in just 5 years, three different offensive coordinators.
Man, Mularkey was low-key a good offensive coordinator, too.
Look, and then as far as, you know, me being a wide receiver and trying to, you know, gel with my quarterback and have a rapport with him, I went through four starting quarterbacks in 5 years. Kent Graham, Cordell Stewart, Tommy Maddox, and then Ben.
We did that in one season, bro. But go ahead, go ahead.
But
we did four different quarterbacks in like one season, man.
Well, okay. we are talking about Washington.
Yeah,
so, you know, those things are kind of expected at the quarterback.
It's par
position.
For the course, huh?
right. Yeah. So
way to
have fun on my expense. But so. Yes, but getting back to it, for Carson Wentz, I think for him to go out and have some immediate success instead of going to a place where he doesn't know the offense or understand it at all. Is to get back with his guy Frank Wright, so he can get all these people out of his ear of how bad he's been.
Yeah.
So
he's been bad. He's turned the ball over. He hasn't played well. There could be a lot of elements as to why he has played so poorly. But, you know, one thing that I'll introduce before we wrap this one up, and speaking of wrapping up, we're going to wrap up this segment pretty soon as well. I would offer this. And having the familiarity of Coach Reich and going there, I still think that it brings into play a lot of uncertainties that could lead to a destructive, disruptive type of situation. And the reason why I say that is for the very reasons that we're saying it would make sense for him to go there and be a part of that team and that organization because of his familiarity and the belief of the head coach that used to coach him and coached him at his highest moment is going to now have the pressure of delivering because he brought in this player that he had so much success with in Philadelphia. It's going to be so much pressure on Carson Wentz to have to be able to do well immediately right out of the gate. And we all know, I don't know how we gotten so far removed from understanding the level of familiarity and continuity as it applies to players. Now, what took place in Tampa Bay, I get it. All right, first-year quarterback, he gets in, it's a COVID year. It redefines how we're supposed to look at immediately winning. But there's something to be said about learning your team, getting that timing down, getting the continuity of it down, and going from there. I think a lot of those things could play against a guy like Carson Wentz, and it could backfire on the coach. And now the coach, his job is on the line based upon making this decision.
No way. No way.
Why not?
If Carson Wentz doesn't play well, you know what they're going to say? He's finished.
Yeah, he's Carson Wentz.
He's finished. He hasn't played well in a couple years. Frank Wright couldn't save him. That's what they're going to say. They're not – Frank Wright is not – line will not be on the job. They'll say Carson Wentz is finished. What happened in Philadelphia, he's not able to overcome, blah, 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 blah. Let's go get another quarterback. If he plays well, and he doesn't have to have immediate success, he just needs to show progress. And if he plays well, they'll say, oh, wow, him and Frank Wright have this connection. This is where he needed to be all along. They just have this chemistry that, you know, other people don't have. And so for me, for the Colts, it's a win-win if he does not play well. But it's hard to believe they have a run game, that offensive line, that defense. You play Jacksonville, probably a rookie quarterback. You play the Houston Texans twice in your division. Deshaun Watson may or may not be there. In essence, you can probably count on four wins right there. And so the hardest team you're going to play in your division, the toughest team, would be the Tennessee Titans. And so right off the bat, you got four wins. There you go.
Well, I'm glad that you guys brought up the treatment of quarterbacks and how well it goes, because what I would like to do on the other side of us paying these bills is talk about the treatment of the professional athlete. It has been made into a very polarizing and provocative conversation by one basketball player. Oh, yes, we're former football players, but we do talk basketball. By the way, some of us could have played basketball if we decided to play basketball. I mean, I ain't going to say no names, but Plexico Burst.
I think there's only one out of this trio.
You know, I got recruited, but I was talking about you just purely based upon your height and status of how tall you were. I don't know if you would have been able to bang down in the trenches and get rebounded. You are a tad bit slim, sir. But, you know, it is what it is. And you know, if you were good at it, Plex, they might treat you well, but then they might treat you not well. And that's the whole premise of our topic coming up on the other side of this break. We're going to talk Draymond Green, treatment of players and top players when they request trades. You're listening to the Dan Patrick Show with the Up On Game crew filling in. I'm LeVar Arrington. That's TJ Hushmanzada and Plexico Burris. This is Fox Sports Radio. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, yeah.
That's my era right there. Basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way they dribble up and down the court just like I'm the king of the microphone on the Dan Patrick Show, that is. Yeah,
good morning. Y'all should see my two-step right now.
Ah, welcome into the show, everybody. Yeah, you were listening to the Dan Patrick Show. We're the Up On Game crew filling in. I'm LeVar Arrington. That's TJ Hushmanzada. The guy you heard talking a whole lot of noise about basketball and this, that, and the other was one Plexico Burris. And speaking of Plexico Burris, let's touch on a topic of conversation that has become a very, very, very provocative conversation concerning your old your alumnus, your alumni, your guy.
My guy Day-Day.
Day-Day, is that what y'all call him? That's the nickname you guys use so well for him?
Yeah, from the Sag Nasty. Shout out to Saginaw.
Okay, I know about Saginaw. I know a little bit about it. I mean, I know more about Bloomfield Hills. I mean, Bloomfield Hills means that's where the people with money, that's where they are. I mean, I heard Saginaw is a little different.
It's a lot different.
Yeah, so shots out to – isn't that where Charlie Rogers is from? Shots out to Charlie Rogers, man.
My brother, God rest the
legend, right? All right, so here's some sound bites. Obviously and apparently, Michigan State people love to be controversial and stir things up. So here's a sound bite from Michigan State's Draymond Green.
Drummond, before the game, sit on the sideline, then go to the back, and then come out in street clothes because a team is going to trade him. It's bullshit. But you can say Andre Drummond's getting traded publicly, and we're looking to trade him publicly, and he's to stay professional and just deal with it. But then when Kyrie Irving say, oh, my mental health is off, everybody go crazy about that too. Do you not think that affects someone mentally? As much as we put into this game to be great, to come out here and be in shape, to produce for fans every single night, and most importantly, to help your team win, do you think that doesn't affect someone mentally? But as players, we're told to, no, you can't say that, you can't say this, but teams can. It goes along the same lines of when everyone wants to say, oh man, that young guy can't figure it out. But no one wants to say the organization can't figure it out. At some point, the players must be respected in these situations, and it's ridiculous, and I'm sick of seeing it. Y'all have a great night. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Why is Draymond so mad, Plex? I mean, let's start with you.
I'm gonna tell you why he's so mad. Hey man, the reason why you love Draymond Green is because he's always gonna come out and voice his opinion, not only for himself, his teammates, and even guys around the league. So to let them know that, you know, they have a voice, and when it comes to situations like this, and you look at the Andre Drummond situation. We just had this conversation last week. It continues to show us that the owners are saying, we are the owners, you are the players. So we are going to conduct business for the organization, what we fit is best for us. Then we will talk to the player. So basically what the team is doing to Andre Drummond is saying, listen, you have more value to us in being traded and going to another team and to bring in, you know, I don't know who they're bringing in, maybe two or three more players. So we are going to sit you just in case of the possibility that you get injured and now you are not able to pass a physical to go to another team. It's a double standard. LeBron came out and supported Draymond when he came out and said and came out and said that. But what it shows us is that the owners are showing us that, you know, we're always going to be in control. But when the player chooses to sit out, which I've never agreed with that, they're a healthy scratch. You know what? I'm tired. LeBron is resting tonight. You know, all these people show up and LeBron's not playing. People get upset. But now, as an organization, you're doing the same thing. But you throw these guys under the bus when they want to rest for a night or two off because they're playing five games in 7 days. They take a day off. But for the organization, you can rest and you're not going to play Andre Drummond because it gives him the possibility of getting hurt. And now you lose the value of the players coming to your team, and now you can't trade him.
Mm. When I look at it, I see both sides of it. Now, let me ask you guys this. It wasn't just Andre Drummond. It was Blake Griffin. Have y'all seen Blake Griffin run up and down the court lately?
I have not.
Man, I guarantee Blake Griffin is like, cool, I ain't got to run up and down the court. Yes, I don't want to play and I get paid. He's nothing like he was. When you're on the losing team and you have a possibility to be traded to a winning team, do you believe that they care that they're not playing right now? I believe if – now, I don't know if it's okay we really talked to them and we agreed to not play, but I don't believe they mind. The problem where what Draymond is talking about, where I feel him, is this. If Anthony Davis can be fined for saying, I want to be traded – then how can a team come out and say we're trading him publicly, but when I say I want to be traded publicly, I get fined for that? That's the double standard. Mm-hmm. But yes. We also have to take into account that the NBA is a company. That team is your employer. You're the employee. And so, in essence, if they don't want to play you, they don't have to play you. And so that's what people have. And if you don't like it,
that's crazy.
Then don't play. Retire. And that, I mean, in essence, it could really be that type of game. But where Draymond, where I completely feel him, Anthony Davis comes out and says, I want to be traded and they fine him. But then you can say, we're trading these guys publicly and it's not a big deal. But I don't believe either one of those guys mind it because they're probably looking to get to better situations.
I think there are a few layers to this conversation. I would say the first part of it is I think that there's some sensibility, there is some merit to what Draymond is saying, and the stance that he's taken. It sounds as though it's a big brother role that he's taken in this moment where he popped off, almost coming to the defense of someone that he cares about. It also comes across as kind of entitled. And I think it pushes that entitled envelope because, I mean, let's be honest. If you're disgruntled about the treatment as an NBA player, try being a football player, Dre. You went out for the football team. I saw you in the uniform at spring practice.
When you say entitled, who are you speaking of?
Oh, Draymond? I mean, didn't he try to play tight end? It looked like he tried
to play. Yes, he did.
It was short-lived.
Yeah,
but
he did.
It's short-lived enough where you probably wouldn't remember him putting on the same uniform.
Yeah, I remember that. But you just said it's a sense of entitlement.
In terms of
speaking up?
No. Oh. Not for him speaking up. Everybody has the right to speak up and say what they feel. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm saying sense of entitlement based upon the content of what he was speaking up about. Like, I get that. You know, fans are always going to generally, outside of, I mean, I guess now fantasy football has changed the mentality of the fan. They're more about their points and more about their players on their team than sometimes they are about the team they root for. It has kind of decentralized.
100%.
Yeah, it has decentralized the traditional approach to fandom. But in the truest regard, in the truest sense of when you're dealing with fans and cities and they represent their franchises, players come and go. But a lot of times, diehard fans live and die by what their team is doing. I mean, just like Joel in the control room that tried to drown me out with the music, you know.
Drown them out, Joel.
Joel has on his Detroit Lions baseball cap. Right.
Wow.
And for what it's worth, I bet you Joel is sitting back there like Stafford. Matthew Stafford wasn't ever the answer for us in Detroit anyway. So he back there shaking his head. Right. So he wasn't our guy anyway. Do you feel that now that he's gone? Right. He was not the answer for Detroit to get to where they're trying to go.
I'm glad he's gone.
OK, so there you go. That is the mentality of a fan. Right. So when it comes out and fans and media jump on players for saying they want to go or they don't want to play and that people start burning jerseys and saying we wanted you to go. We're happy that you left. We're happy that we have you on the bench. To me, that's always going to be a part of it. You're never going to outdo that because of the loyalty that people have for the franchises that they choose to put their loyalty in. So I almost feel like it's a wasted conversation to begin with unless you're looking at the approach of the conversation to say what? That players should be allowed to say they want to trade and that players should still be played even if they're not going to play for that team anymore. What is the purpose? For me, what I took away from it was trying to still figure out is the purpose of what he said in his anger and disappointment, is that based off of him just wanting players to still be played, players to be able to say what they want to say, how they want to say it, and everybody be treated the same? Is that what was his ultimate goal, fellas? Because to me, I'm still kind of lost on what he was trying to get accomplished with stepping up and saying that.
Well, what he's basically saying to us and to the media and to the owners and to the organizations of the NBA is that he is fighting for, along with all the rest of the players, the same thing that Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson are fighting for. They want to be involved with the decisions. And that is what Draymond Green is, you know, coming out and trying to say is that, listen, if you're an owner and you can trade a team publicly and there's no repercussions for it, why does Anthony Davis getting fined $50,000 or whatever the price was for saying that he wants to be traded?
And then so, you also remember Plax and LeVar when Draymond went publicly and was like, man, Devin Booker needs to leave Phoenix.
Yeah, they find him
for that. So yeah. It's a lot of things. He's like, I can't speak my mind and say X, Y, and Z, but you guys can do this.
Maybe that's where it's coming from. Let me ask you guys this. Let me ask you guys this. And I'm not a race baiter at all. And I'll get tweeted and I'll get messages. All you do is bring up race. This is the one time I'm just going to ask the question. Because I just think things through and I kind of sift through it and dissect it and I come up with things that maybe relevant, maybe not. I don't know. You tell me. But, you know, all of the names that we're throwing out there, they're all black athletes. When you look at what just took place with some of these other athletes that are leaving, the teams that they're leaving, there's a mutual agreement between J.J. Watt to leave and Houston to leave the team. No beef, no drama, no kickback, no blowback, just nothing. Stafford leaves, no blowback, no jumping out there in the media talking crazy. Goff, same difference, no jumping out there, no going crazy. I just let me ask the question. And looking at what has taken place with how Deshaun Watson is approaching it with a strong arm mentality, Draymond Green approaching and broaching the conversation with a strong arm mentality, and it being so public and out there in the media. Do you think that this is maybe a product of the sign of the times of where things are? Obviously, Black Lives Matter was a tremendously big movement not too long ago, and has really kind of reshaped how America is handling things and looking at things. I just wonder, is this one of those, is this a move for empowerment? Is this an empowerment move? Is it based off of that? Do you guys see any type of correlation where we're looking at the framing of how we look at athletes and how they're being treated as saying, look, we're looking at a lot of social injustices that are taking place. These are things that we want to start shining light on and have no problem with saying how we feel as it applies to how we're looking at our contractual situations or our places of employment.
I mean, 100%, it's always a method to the madness. And I truly believe personally, had Draymond not been fined, had Anthony Davis not been fined, it wouldn't be a topic of discussion. And you see it both ways, but ultimately, when you are the employee, you pretty much listen to the employer.
You comply.
Or you get fired or you quit. So what you going to do? And so when you receive your check, there's a name at the top of that check that's paying you. That's another employer. They make the rules. And we as athletes have been spoiled our entire lives. And then when you retire is what you said 1, 2, 3, 4 years go by and you're
fourth year.
Man.
You're like, wait, hold on. Did you know what my name was? You walking down the sidewalk for the first time in your life and can do it. Nobody knows you.
You called a make a dentist appointment. When we're playing, when you want to come in today, yeah, I'll come in today. You get to the real world, dentist appointment, I can see you in 3 weeks. Yeah. You're like, huh? Right. I can't come in tomorrow? You know, it's just so many different things that change. Right. But I get where Draymond is coming from, but ultimately he's an employee and you just have to fall in line. I mean, it is what it is. But the NBA, as we all know, the players have so much. They've changed the whole scope of professional sports because they are active. They speak out. And Draymond speaking out, things are going to change because of what he just said. Now, how much, I don't know. But I believe there will be some change, but not as much as he wants.
All right, there's going to be some more basketball discussions that take place later on the show. We're bringing on Eric Pincus in the 8 o'clock hour. He's the lead Lakers writer for Bleacher Report. So we'll get back into the NBA. But before we go back into the NBA, you know, we've had this quarterbacks topic going for the show. That's been our overarching message of breaking down quarterbacks. So let's go back to another place that is relatable to one Plexico Burris as he brought him up earlier on in the show. And we'll throw in a receiver with that. We're going to talk Big Ben and Juju. What's the situation there in Pittsburgh? How does that play out? If you like what you just heard, make sure you subscribe to the Up On Game podcast. Catch us live on Fox Sports Radio on Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern time. We do a pretty good job. I mean, I wouldn't say that we're, you know, the greatest ever, but, you know, we're certainly far from the worst.
We find in our way. You know? We find in our way, right? We find in our way.
I feel like we be really putting cats up on game. I mean, it's like that's what the name of the show is, because we, you know, three cool cats came together and was like, man, we really needed to do this. So make sure you subscribe to Up On Game podcast. We're really appreciative of being on Dan Patrick's show today. We're filling in for him. And we're going to continue the conversation. So, yeah, Dan Patrick's show with Up On Game crew, and we're going to take a quick break. But on the other side, yeah, Big Ben and Juju. Let's see what happens.
Oh. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Welcome back into the show, the Dan Patrick Show, that is, with the Up On Game crew filling in. LeVar Arrington, Plexico Burris, TJ Hushmanzada, TJ Hushmanzada, Plexico Burris, LeVar Arrington. We're here. Got my man Big Sexy in the back, Gavin. He's killing it, making sure we're smooth and we're good. And we got the Detroit Lion from what part you from, Joel? What part?
My family's in Benton Harbor.
Okay, Benton Harbor. There we go. All right, there we go.
He way out there.
Well, he's a Wolverine fan, by the way, Plexico, just so you know. I was making sure.
You know what? I knew it was something.
I felt uncomfortable when he said it as well. I had to make sure he said Wolverines. He didn't say Michigan. He said, yeah, I'm a Wolverine.
You know what? Usually – the Detroit Lion fans,
Wolverine.
RUM guys, it's kind of expected.
Yeah, that's
usual.
I
can tell how the music is coming in. Unbelievable.
Well, welcome.
Coming in just right.
Welcome back to the show. And speaking of losing, in terms of talking about the Detroit Lions, I mean, maybe they would want to bring in Ben Roethlisberger as someone who can compete for the job if Jared Goff doesn't get it done. Let's venture off into the world of Ben Roethlisberger, Juju Schuster-Smith, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, it's one of the two. I mean, they're both the same name, though. I mean, it's correct. Anyway, are they back in Pittsburgh next year? What say you? And is it a good decision to bring them back? Let's start off with Ben Roethlisberger. Do you bring them back, and is it a good decision?
Hey, Plex, you're the resident Steeler. I'm going to let you go ahead and go first, brother.
You know what? I think this is a difficult decision for the Pittsburgh Steelers, in knowing that Ben is basically in the last year of his contract. I think he's due over $40 million. And, you know, this is his last year on his deal.
But he said he'll restructure.
He said he will restructure to come back because he just wants to finish out, you know, his last year in Pittsburgh. And I do believe that he'll be back under center this coming season. But because I believe that Kevin Gilbride and Mike Tomlin are going to give him that graceful, you know, you can play out your last year, retire, and we're going to move on. But for Ben, you know, just looking at, you know, how he's been able to, you know, maneuver over the past couple seasons, you know, he hasn't looked good in the pocket. And, you know, the game is changing. You know, guys are getting faster. I mean, just look at the guys, you know, T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, these guys are coming off the edge. And, you know, he's more of a pocket quarterback now. And then you add on the fact that, you know, Pouncey just retired after 12 seasons. Both of the twins retired. And that center position for the Pittsburgh Steelers is everything for that offense. For people that don't know, the center in Pittsburgh basically makes all the calls, all the fronts, and then the quarterback just basically goes off what the center, you know, makes the calls to the quarterback. And, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers have only had, I believe, 4 or 5 centers in the last 70 years.
Mm.
That's mind-boggling. So I believe he wants to come back. You know, I don't know the situation, if the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be able to, you know, get it done. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Hold on, TJ. Hold on, because here's what's going to happen. This is what you call a tease. We're going to get to a break. And on the other side of this break, I want to know what TJ thinks, because we just heard what a receiver thinks. So I want to hear what another receiver thinks, since these guys think that they're better than me because they played on the offensive side of the ball. And then if there's anything left on the bone, I will handle that, and we'll go from there. You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show with the Up On Game crew filling in. LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, Plexico Bursts, Fox Sports Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.